involving patients in work to improve health services is known to have huge benefits for the NHS, for staff and for other patients. I'm Greg Stringer, and in this episode of the Health Innovation Podcast, we hear from patients whose involvement has had a big impact and from colleagues in the AHSN network who have brought them into their roles. First, I spoke to Wendy Westerby, someone who has recovered from a stroke and now campaigns as a heart hero to raise awareness of the danger of high blood pressure.
Right. And it was in the middle of Bent's Garden Centre. I'd gone with the same girl I've just been talking about. We'd gone for coffee one morning and it was my turn to pay, unfortunately. I paid for two coffees, two pieces of toast. We sat down and my friend Wendy said, "Are you okay?" I said, "Yes." And that was the last thing I remember. Because it was in Bent's, I was carted off to Warrington General. I was in hospital for a month. I left in a wheelchair, hardly able to put a sentence together.
And how long did it take you? How long was your rehabilitation?
Oh, it's still going on.
Right. And tell me about the AF ambassador work then. What does that entail?
Well, it meant the possibility of being able to avoid strokes for so many people, because we were told that quite a number of the general population do have this problem, but they're not aware of it because it's silent. When I had it, I knew I'd got it. I knew something was going on. I called it my funny heart because it would do bleep, 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 and stop, bleep, 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 and stop, that sort of business. But many people don't know. And I'm aware of that because one of the chaps that's on our walking group, he went for a normal flu jab and he was dragged out of the queue because they tested his pulse as they were queuing up and they decided he'd got AF. So he had not a clue about it, whereas I knew and I couldn't understand people that didn't know they'd got it.
Can you tell me how you then converted to a heart hero?
Yes. Well, we were very, very fortunate. We won the collaboration part of the HSJ Awards in the back end of 21. And when we were interviewed afterwards, we said, "What comes next?" And Debbie and I both said, "To tell the world." And Debbie decided that the best thing to do was to expand the AF procedure and to pick up BP, blood pressure. So we, several of us, went along and had the BP training. I'd already actually done it through the Stroke Association, but we had to bring me up to scratch. And that, then we combined the two together because it's very easy. In, you don't need to remove any clothes unless you've got very heavy jackets on. They both fit quite well together.
Why is it important to know your numbers?
Oh, very, very important. You don't get your numbers when you're checking for AF. There's no numbers to check there. But the blood pressure one is very important because you don't want to be too high. You don't want to really be too low, which is very rarely the case. You don't want to be too fast or too slow. You just need to know what's going on in your body and make sure it's... average for you. You can get a very high reading one day and very low the next day. So you need to balance it out and see where it is as a normal run of things.
Were there any occasions when you may have actually ushered somebody towards an appointment with a doctor which may have saved their life, do you think?
I reckon so, yes. One in particular, we did a lot of testing at a library when there were other people doing other things. And there was a gentleman came in with his dog, very worried about his dog. We got somebody to keep the dog outside and it was his blood pressure figures were very high. I can't remember exactly what because we don't keep notes of them. I just remember it was high. The librarian offered him a cup of coffee, and which I refused on his behalf while we were trying to get this blood pressure sorted out. I tested him once, tested him twice, test him three times with 5-minute breaks in between, and they were all very high. So I gave him a letter, and I understand he went straight to the doctor, and the doctor sent him straight to the hospital But we've no idea what happened after that because we can't contact him at all.
So the question for me really is, what do you think you've derived from these several years that you've been involved in this voluntary work, all around cardiovascular work? What's it mean to you?
I like to think I'm contributing. When you have a stroke, you lose everything in a flash of an eye. And it's very, very demoralising. I can't drive, I can't cook as well, I can't garden, but I can do, despite my mobility problems, I can sit down, I can test people and hopefully prevent them from going ahead and having a stroke.
And that must be very satisfying.
Mm, very satisfying.
I'm with Debbie Parkinson, the Public Involvement Lead at the Innovation Agency. Debbie, can you tell me how you reflect on what we've just heard Wendy Westerby described there?
I think we all heard the passion in Wendy's voice and the effects of the stroke that she's had, the devastating effects, and the fact that she's living with the effects almost 20 years on has given her the motivation to help others and prevent them. It's the passion that she demonstrates in trying to stop others suffering in the same way that she suffered over many, many years and still is.
So it's her own experience that brings that extra little bit of commitment, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what would you say is the value of patient involvement? And what approaches do the individual AHSNs bring to patient involvement?
Involving patients right at the very beginning of any project is important. All our relationships with clinicians, doctors, consultants, healthcare visitors, whoever they are usually on a one-to-one basis. And we build that relationship on trust. Patients trust us to do the right thing for them. And we need to listen to them. They know their conditions, their symptoms, their bodies just better than anybody else. And if we listen to them, bring them in right at the beginning, and it's the old saying, isn't it? No decision about me without me. So making the decision, if you give patients tablets and don't tell them what they're for, what they will do, they just won't take them. It's just one example, but it's a relationship between us, isn't it?
I'm joined now by Graham Smith, a patient from South London who suffers chronic pain, and by Natasha Callender, Senior Project Manager at the Health Innovation Network in South London.
Can I come to you first, Graham, and can I ask you to give me an idea of the project you've been involved in?
Well, the project is a sort of collaboration between those that are practicing the medicine side of treating patients with chronic pain. But for me, it's the involvement that it brought together a number of patients to see what the collective thoughts were of how we felt the support we needed, and a way of moving forward to make access to that support much more available.
And how did you come to be involved in the project in the first place?
Well, unfortunately, I spent an awful lot of time trying to find support, and it was just past the parcel for me. You pass from one to the next. But I was fortunate enough to happen by chance across Bromley Well, which is a social prescribing team. And I got into a pain program for them and a peer support group, which meets via video weekly. And it was through them that they sent out the link that Natasha had put out for people to make an application to be involved.
So what was your motivation for becoming involved in the first place? Because obviously, you know, there wasn't part of your treatment. There must have been something pushing you towards
it. Because of my treatment, or lack of. 3 years on, I'm still trying to get a diagnosis for the things like, I think I've got nerve damage now. And you don't feel like your voice is being heard. You attend these appointments and it's almost like they've decided the outcome before you've even spoken to them. There's no correlation between the letters you received to the appointment that you had, which really does limit you and even your GP on being able to further refer you on should you need it. So for me, over the 2 year period, the biggest support I got was actually being in peer support groups to not feel so isolated. And I gave it a term in the end. I called it pain-splaining, because you feel like you have to justify why you can't do things, the problems you're having, because you're made to feel guilty that you can't deal with your pain. So when I saw this as an opportunity to have my voice heard, to be honest, I jumped at the chance.
And now I take it that you're much happier about the way your treatment is going. Can you tell me a little bit about how it feels to be, you know, properly consulted about your own condition, about your own treatment? How does that feel?
It kind of gave me a little bit of my dignity back, and it was quite empowering. You know, I've got to say, Natasha and her team, from the very outset, there was no predefined direction. Obviously, she had a remit of what the project was. But what amazed me was the patients came together pretty much with one opinion of different things. But we were all coming from the same place. And Natasha and her team took that and followed that direction. And to have someone do that after appointment, where you're told how you should be feeling instead of being asked how you feel, for me was really empowering. And it's triggered me to now want to go on. So I'm going on into a volunteer's role to hopefully help other people to deal with pain through my lived experience.
I hope this isn't a daft question, but it's just occurred to me as we've been talking, Graham, but do you think your being consulted has actually alleviated the pain in any sense? Because part of the pain must have been a little bit mental, emotional. Do you feel it's in some way or mitigated?
I still feel guilty if I have a couple of hours of respite, which is ridiculous because people talk to me about good days and bad days. And so far, I've not even got into the days. So the mental impact that has is quite draining. So to find a project where we as a collective will listen to, it takes away that mental anguish that you feel day to day as a person. And it sort of came that an awful lot of people who are suffering themselves are supporting other people. And for that reason, we need our voice to be heard.
And is there anything in the course of your involvement that has surprised you? Has anything emerged from the work that you've been doing that has come as a surprise to you? Is there anything you've learned from it, I wonder?
I think the surprise was that someone within the health system was willing to listen, which isn't, it's a sort of seesaw kind of thing. It's a positive and a negative, obviously. But what really stood out for me was from the moment we all came into the first meeting and started to talk, we all had the same opinion that it's not just a physical issue. We are a person. I've just been treated for body parts. And you do need to look at the whole person for the way that pain works. There is a mental side to it. So I think for me, it gave me a sense of purpose. And also there's an awful amount of uplift feeling from knowing that you could go on to help someone else.
And that's my next question. What do you think the project will have on, what impact do you think the project will have on other people, Graham, who experienced chronic pain? What will you do for
them? I'm hoping it will be really positive. I'm hoping that the first thing it will bring is that having access to other people who are suffering, from all the groups that I've been in that involve pain, that is one of the big things that everyone says, that you feel so isolated, and how empowering it is to meet other people that you say, oh, I've got pain that's persistent, And that's it. You don't need to describe what you're going through, what you've had. The people there get it. So you then can just talk about what things make you feel good instead of what things are making you feel bad. So hopefully, I hope I'm seeing it already because I've been shown the website for Bromley Wellbeing and they're now starting to link together different services and showing it to people. So with readily accessible peer support, it should dampen the mental effect of having chronic pain.
Thanks for that, Graham. Can we move on to Natasha? Natasha, can you explain from, you know, inside the project why it's important? Do you think, why is it important for patients to play a role in shaping services and their treatment?
I think it's important because the patient experience of the services that we deliver, that's the true insight into how well the NHS is working for people. And we often tend to historically involve patients in a way where we've already set up the service, we know what pathway we want, and then we're just sense checking it with patients or people who are living with long-term conditions and or their carers. But actually, the approach that you take, particularly with experience-based co-design, you're leveraging the patient's wishes and their experience to make improvements. You know, you'll never get something right from the beginning, but it's really valid to have patient involvement right from the beginning so that they can see the pitfalls that you might not necessarily see because you're not on the receiving end of that service or that care.
Okay, so what does this mean in practice? You say you bring in the patient right at the beginning. You're not bringing in the patient to simply endorse something that you're already doing. But just how early in that process, the delivery process, do you involve the patient? And what do you ask him or her to do, actually, in fact?
Yeah, so with experience-based co-design, it's a methodology developed by the Point of Care Foundation. And there are key stages right from the very beginning where historically you would start with observing patients and carers in a particular clinical or care setting to get some insights yourself. And then you would involve patients by interviewing them and or their carers to find out about their experiences of receiving healthcare. And particularly with our project, the focus was around chronic pain. We also did the same for health and care staff, not just clinicians working within pain clinics or general practice, but a range of people, given, you know, the impact of pain. It does impact every aspect of health and well-being. We try to involve as many health and care professionals across the entire healthcare landscape. And then you move on to doing some thematic analysis of that. And then you have feedback events, again, for the staff, for the patients. With the patients in particular, you develop a film, and that film is very, very powerful. It's first showed to the patients because it's a summary of their collective experience, and we were able to draw out themes starting from right from getting a diagnosis down to the practical challenges of living with pain. And again, you drive the project based around the patient's priorities. You then do a similar exercise with the staff, and then you bring people together, and it's only then the staff see the film. And from that point on, there is, you know, patients and partners are treated as equal partners in order to then go on to co-design outputs based around their priority. And for our project participants, bringing people together by the way of peer support or group education were the priority areas for them to focus on.
So can you explain, what does the film do then? What problem does it tackle? It seems to have an impact on both the patients and, as you say, the clinicians and practitioners. What does it do?
Yeah, so the Catalyst film is a 30-minute film that you will create based upon the interviews that you conduct with patients or carers. In our project, we just worked with patients. And it's a real powerful summary of collective experience because you're actually asking people, what is your experience of healthcare? right from getting a diagnosis to then your interactions with health and care staff throughout that journey. Also, you know, insights in terms of the role of medicines. We know for chronic pain, particularly opioids, which is the focus of our medication safety improvement program, opioids don't have a place in the management of chronic pain. So, you know, but they still are prescribed and historically have been prescribed. So it's then moving on, you know, conversations to, okay, so if those group of medicines are not appropriate and sometimes are causing avoidable harm, what are the alternatives? You know, are you aware of alternatives? Are you being offered alternatives? Right through to, you know, the impact on just living with chronic pain and the changes and modifications you have to make to your life and the impact that it does have on you. So it's quite a powerful insight into patients' experience. You will not get that through a 10-minute GP appointment, and you will not get that through a pain specialist consultant review, because there's a set agenda there. And the focus is typically around the pain, not your experience living with pain. And given chronic pain in particular, it impacts every aspect of well-being. It's a really rich insight that does impact patients in terms of them seeing, you know, you're not alone. You don't feel isolated. There are people who are experiencing very similar things to you. But also for the staff, it's a really powerful insight in terms of, wow, the care that I'm providing might not necessarily be addressing the issues that my patients are experiencing.
That's really interesting. And just to, I'm going to ask you two more questions. The first, can you tell me, give me the title of the project and a very brief description of what it is?
So we conducted a chronic pain experience-based co-design project. Experience-based co-design is a methodology from the Point of Care Foundation. It's a stepwise approach where essentially you use patients' wishes to sort of, you leverage those to improve our services. But most importantly, you bring patients and or carers and health and care staff together as equal partners to co-design improvements to existing services.
Thanks. And finally, well, not a question for you, but if I can bring in Graham again. Now I've heard from both of you, we've heard from both sides of the project. What would you say to Natasha, Graham, by way of summary of your involvement and her invitation, if you like, to you to help out on the project and support it? What would you say to her?
I think Natasha knows that I'm very grateful to have been part of the project. And especially that she's listened to each and every one of us. And instead of going towards that predefined goal that you do feel that you get from everywhere else when you're having appointments, being listened to and seeing the project change direction has been perhaps one of the most positive things that I've had through my medical journey. And to know that you could help someone else through her listening to us means that I'm looking forward more than I was. I was on a day-to-day program. So this has helped me sort of realise that there will be more meetings that will occur that will mean that my voice gets listened to more. And that's what's led me on my path to eventually join an organisation for mental health, where I'm going to volunteer once a week in a club. And they themselves have recognised that the person who is having to deal with the pain is the expert, and learnt experience sort of overrules anything that you will learn in a classroom.
I'm with Debbie Parkinson again to find out how organisations can make the most of patient engagement work.
So now, Debbie, that you've heard our interview with Graham Smith, what do you think it tells us about the value of patients' involvement?
I think Graham's experience articulates quite clearly how he felt listened to by being part of the group that Natasha had started. The fact that we're creating a healthcare system that treats not just the symptoms and the problem, but the full patient and the patient as a whole. I think Graham is articulated really well that although he's in chronic pain, that's what doctors, nurses, clinicians deal with when he goes for his appointments, forgetting about the mental health issues that he might have that obviously affect that. And how he said that being part of that group, dealing with his mental health, actually helped his pain as well.
So what kind of things should patient involvement teams consider when setting up their programmes?
Well, most people talk about co-production, but before you talk about co-production and bringing people in at the beginning, you actually need to bring the patients in a step before that and help the patients tell you what the problems are, what they would like to use. It's no good developing an app that patients won't use, or putting in a water cooler when the patients want a vending machine. You have to listen to the patients before you start addressing the problem so that we're meeting the needs of the patients and solving the right problems and not just what we think are the problems. That way we can involve patients, carers, communities in all our work, and it's the right thing to do, isn't it?
That's great. And one final question, which we may or may not leave in. At what point, Debbie, do we bring in the patient, do you think?
Right at the very beginning, at the inception of any project, when you're asking for ideas for what products you want, innovations you want, devices, hospital appointments, how to do that. You need to bring them in right before those decisions are made of what you're going to address, so that we can actually listen to the patients and act on their concerns and what the patients want to do, along with the clinicians. The clinician's voice shouldn't be underestimated, but it's a partnership, isn't it, for the healthcare for all of us.
Thanks very much to all our guests. If you'd like to know more about our patient engagement work, visit the AHSN Network website.